This is CyberSound, your simplified and fundamentals-focused source for all things cybersecurity.
Welcome to CyberSound. I'm your host, Jason Pufall, in studio today with Michael Grandy.
Great to be here.
And we have some repeat guests. So I appreciate Rob McWilliams, who has actually worked with Vanguard for a long time as our internal privacy expert. So Rob, thanks for joining. And William Roberts from Dave Pitney, who actually did a recent podcast with us relative to data privacy. So I appreciate both of you joining today.
You're welcome.
Great. Thanks, Jason.
So I'm going to start and I'm going to say my background probably is a little bit more on the information security space, perhaps a little less on the privacy space, and certainly less on the privacy considerations relative to AI. So I think I'm going to lean a lot on both Rob and William today. So, and in the conversation leading up to this, I think we agreed it would make a lot of sense to spend a minute on, you know, what is AI? Is what we're talking about aligning with what the general population thinks about with AI? So, Bill, maybe I can just kick it over to you and say, spend a minute on, you know, what is AI, if you don't mind.
Yeah, certainly. I'm happy to. And thanks again for having me back. I want to start off with the idea that there is no consensus, straightforward definition of AI out there. I think going back in time, AI was seen as like the smart robot. And I think now some people on the far probably overcorrecting see it as something new. But AI has been with us for a long time. And most of us are using AI in some capacity and have been for 4 years. I think it's best to describe it as a technology that uses a mathematical algorithm to perform a certain task. What's making AI buzzy now is that there's been a shift from like this machine learning model of AI that we've been seeing for a while. We use it, you know, in legal research and filing and all sorts of things. But it's really the buzz now is about generative AI, which is AI that can create something new. It creates a response, it generates something, whether it could be audio or pictures or text. So that's kind of the two pieces. AI is not new. It's sort of, you know, what is old is now new again. Right. We're looking at AI in a more unique context here and in a much more powerful way as well. I don't know, Robert, do you have anything to add?
Not really. I know there have been some efforts made to define what AI is, but I agree. I don't think that there is one that everyone now agrees on. And I certainly couldn't quote one of the definitions, and I would get very tongue-tied if I tried. So I'm afraid I tend to go with the old, you know, if it quacks like a duck definition. And that's perhaps not very sophisticated for this discussion, but I'm going to go with it. That, you know, I will not go as far as to say that if we all know what AI is just by looking at it, but it tends to be where we are right now. And the interesting thing, I'm going to Bill's point, is that from the privacy point of view, a lot of this stuff is not new. That in the past, we've already had laws on the books for decades that deal with automated decisions, shall we say. And in the AI world, that's, from the privacy point of view, that's going to be a lot of the discussion, automated decisions being made by machines. So it's not new for sure. It is and it isn't. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to jump outside a little bit of what we put it directly in our outline, because I had an idea as we were speaking. I had an interesting conversation with a client where we suggested using some AI tools to do meeting transcription. So basically record the meeting and get a transcript when you're done. And the response, honestly, the response wasn't that positive to begin with. But then, interestingly, sort of segued into, well, we would be more comfortable with one vendor and their and perhaps the way that we think their privacy policies or privacy statements are constructed versus another vendor. And I'm wondering if you, before we segue too deeply into privacy law, how are things like ChatGPT and Microsoft with Copilot and Zoom with their AI companion constructing their privacy policies? And are they, you know, completely company centric, or are they actually, are they trying to protect in any way their consumers?
Well, that's a very loaded question in terms of protecting consumers, but there has been a lot of movement. So, you know, in the United States, the basic premise for data privacy rights when dealing with a particular company or school or agency, it's notice and consent. That consent could be an opt-in or an opt-out. We could certainly have a big conversation. I think it's important, even more so in the context of AI, of the value of the consent, how meaningful consent is. But because of, but as a part of this model, you provide notice and then either consent, opt out, or opt in. Let's talk about that in terms of like Zoom. So Zoom provides you a privacy notice. Your opt out right is to simply not use Zoom, basically. If you decide to use Zoom, if you just decide to visit a particular website, you're inherently opting in, even if it's not necessarily transparent to the user. Those notices and the privacy policies then are living documents, like we like to say. They're updated quite often. And we did see in 2023 quite a few companies make changes to their privacy policies to greater allow the company to utilize the data being collected from a consumer for Gen AI purposes. One of those was actually Zoom. They actually got a lot of pushback. They may have curtailed it. They may have pulled back on some of that. Don't quote me. I forget exactly how that resolved. But Google, too, they updated their privacy policies. So privacy policies aren't static. So that's something with your client would need to be aware of. Things are changing. So unless that privacy policy is going to be made part of like a services agreement, which is exceptionally unusual, that could change the day after you sign the agreement. And we are seeing that occur a lot as companies reevaluate what is this data we're receiving and how could that then be used for Gen AI purposes.
That makes sense.
And just to add to that, I think very recently the FTC, I believe, has sort of warned companies that they shouldn't go too far in changing their privacy notices, privacy policies, to do what Bill described. And they particularly raised the issue of retroactivity, that if I have provided data to, feel bad saying Zoom, since we're here using their technology, but we'll use it as an example. If I provided my data to Zoom under a privacy notice that did not give Zoom broad rights to use the data for artificial intelligence, can they retroactively claim those rights by changing their privacy policy? And I think the answer is probably not. So that certainly is an issue for organizations, is ensuring that they have the legal right to use personal information or any other data, but I'm talking privacy here, that they use to train and feed AI systems. And I'm not sure that ChatGPT and other, you know, generative AI has set a very good example with that.
Bill, perhaps you can spend a moment. You know, Rob spent a second earlier talking about existing privacy laws and how some things are sort of in place to deal with some of the unique aspects of AI. But are there challenges with privacy laws sort of moving forward? that need to be under consideration?
Yes, there are. Well, there's always challenges with privacy laws, but I think AI presents a few. I think it doesn't present a few new challenges, but also it amplifies some current ones, some of which Rob was getting at in terms of us being Zoom users at this moment. So let's take a step back. The fundamental way Gen AI works is data goes in, there's an input, and there's an output. That's what privacy law has been designed largely to regulate. It regulates the collection of data, and then it regulates the processing, use, and redisclosure of the data. Yeah. So on a fundamental basis, I think it's important to recognize that AI does fall within the general world of current privacy laws. There are some folks who argue we need separate privacy laws for AI. That's like a very open question. Personally, I don't think that is the direction in which the law is going to be going. I think we're going to see a shift in privacy law more holistically to new models, which will include AI. But I don't think we're going to have AI-specific privacy laws. So right now, a company that is collecting data for use in AI, using it, redisclosing it, processing it, should be looking at the current laws on the books that they're subject to, whether that's GDPR in Europe, California, Virginia, et cetera, HIPAA, et cetera. That's where we're at now. But I mentioned that it amplifies that AI. I think it amplifies some of the problems with current law. And Rob mentioned that we're using Zoom and that we talk about notice and consent. Let's just continue to talk about me now. I'm a privacy lawyer. Did I read Zoom's privacy policy before I logged on to your invitation? The answer is no. Right. Have I read it? Yes, but for client purposes, not
right.
My own. If it says in there, the current policy right now, if I had spent some time, if I had like an hour of free time and I decided to read it, would I have any idea what it actually means to use my data from Zoom for AI purposes? No, I have no idea. I don't have the slightest clue what that means. And that's for a couple of reasons. First is AI is hard. It's a complicated topic. Do I know how it works? No, gosh, no. Is there anything Zoom can tell me so that I know how it works? I don't think so. I don't think there's anything the privacy policy could say that would educate me without me going to get my PhD in data science. And then maybe I'd have a chance. The last point, I'd love, Rob to pick up on some of this, is a lot of what AI, a lot of the challenges for AI privacy isn't necessarily in the data that's collected, is the data that's generated. And that's why I think Gen AI is so challenging for privacy laws, because, maybe Zoom is collecting my name and the sound of my voice and my location in Hartford, perhaps. That's fine. I could understand that, I think, to a degree, but I don't have any insight into what would be created about me. What data is created about William Roberts of Dade Pitney? And I don't think it's even possible for me to understand that, because AI is always changing. It's always coming up with new things. It's always learning. There's always new use cases. So I think that some of those points, the transparency, the consent, that's where I think a lot of the challenge is going to lie, because you do need to comply with current privacy laws, But when you actually think about how these laws work in the context of AI, it's sort of like the round peg square hole problem at times. So that's like a high level. But no, if you're looking to develop or deploy an AI system at your company, don't just assume that there's no special AI privacy law. You need to be looking at the laws on the books, whether that's CCPA, HIPAA, Fair Credit Reporting Act, and so forth.
Yes, absolutely. And I'd throw in there as well, what the key regulators are thinking and doing, what your state attorney general is doing in this area, what the FTC is doing in this area. One, just to elaborate on the Fair Credit Reporting Act, one for people who may not be super familiar with that, that's been around for decades now, and it basically regulates anything that's considered to be a credit credit report, basically. And that doesn't have to be for use by someone giving credit. It could be for someone employing you or whatever, anything that gives an assessment of you. And it's very focused on adverse actions. So if an adverse action is taken against you because of a credit reporting agency's report, you have rights to be notified and rights that you can dispute that action. Now, this doesn't apply across the board. It applies to credit reporting agencies and their customers. But it's an example of a law that most definitely will apply to some of the things that particularly the financial sector will do with AI, and indeed is already doing without AI. Another one that's kind of interesting just to bring up is the Rite Aid case, where in fact the FTC actually banned Rite Aid from using facial recognition AI, I think for 5 years, because they had deployed it without reasonable safeguards. And what it meant in practice, if I understand the story correctly, is that people were being tagged in the system as shoplifters, thieves, based on the technology, and that tagging was not accurate. And in fact, that it was discriminatory against certain groups of people. So as well as there being laws to consider, the FTC can invoke its unfair and deceptive mandate and take action. And it certainly making noises that's what it intends to do. It's going to be very, it's very hard to see how all of this will play out. But I do think that those are the important points, that existing privacy laws do cover AI. It's not if you're talking AI, you're not suddenly on a clean legal sheet. The regulators, whether attorneys general or federal regulators, are going to be active in this area. It'll be interesting to see how effective that will be, whether fines and orders are going to change the behavior of companies deploying AI. I think we're always, with technology, we always seem to be in the position that the use of the technology is moving much faster than the regulators are able to keep up with. But we'll see.
Yeah, and I'd say when we spoke with the senators, that was basically their message. Yeah. Was we're trying to catch up, the technology usage versus, the laws surrounding it.
I always feel like you're coming at it from behind.
Rob, if you could, maybe briefly, EU, I think you mentioned that the EU has what, the EU AI Act? I tend to think of sort of the EU as being maybe more progressive on the privacy side than the U.S. Can you give a little bit of an overview of what maybe some of those distinctions might be, and is that relevant to us here yet?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I'll just start with a quick word on the GDPR, which in many ways was the first big comprehensive privacy regulation. And it's definitely got its faults. And I don't think it's necessarily the model that the rest of the world should be following. But it does have the advantage that it's technology agnostic. And meaning that it's not trying to regulate a specific technology like AI or whatever. So it avoids some of the pitfalls of that. For example, when we're here in the US, we're trying to deal with the privacy implications of the internet with laws that relate to telephone tapping, which we're still dealing with. But the AI Act, just at a very, very high level, it's intended to ensure that AI is safe and is respectful of fundamental rights and values. Who can argue with that? The EU wants to make sure that the Act applies sort of across the ecosystem of AI. So if you are a provider of AI, a developer of AI, it will apply to you. If you are a deployer, an importer, a distributor, it'll cover everybody. And perhaps most interestingly is it divides AI systems into risk categories. And the highest risk is just prohibited, end of story. And an example of that would be real-time remote biometric identification in public spaces. So if you've got systems set up that are sort of looking out and saying, oh, look, based on his eyes, that's Jason there at the ATM machine on the other side of the mall, that will not be allowed in the EU. Perhaps for most businesses, it's the next system down, next level down of risk that will be most interesting, and that's the high-risk systems. And these are systems that might be used in the hiring process or the employee evaluation process, credit scoring systems, that kind of thing. And I think the big obligation on the business there is going to be to come up with some kind of conformity assessment, which I, to be honest with you, I don't know exactly what that is, but I'm assuming it is a formal assessment of the AI system to ensure it complies with all of the details of the AI Act to make sure that it is, you know, safe to use and legal to use. So that's the EU's approach. Would comment on this. I very much doubt the US will go completely in that direction, but I would hope that if there is AI regulation in the United States, that it's done at the federal level, not at the state level. And maybe that's a vain hope. And that it would be fairly comprehensive and technology agnostic. But that's the EU AI Act in hopefully a nutshell.
Yeah, just to pick up on that, I don't see so the AI Act in many ways is similar to the Rite Aid case, where the emphasis is less on notice and consent or one's individual control of their data for all the reasons that I mentioned. I don't have the time to educate myself on it. I don't have the experience. I don't have the knowledge. I don't have the PhD. I can't keep up with a fluid AI system. So it sort of takes the burden off of the individual and then brings it to the company. Sort of like your GDPR DPIAs, for example. It's a little, and I think that's largely what we saw with Rite Aid, saying, you know what, it doesn't actually matter if someone consented or you gave notice, because this was just harmful. And I don't love the US approach where it's something is harmful depending upon who's looking at it. I think the AI Act approach to give some structure to this is very helpful for businesses, but it does lead to a whole host of questions like that Rob touched upon. Like, who is, what harm? Is it a harm to society? Is it a harm to me personally? Is it a benefit to Jason, but a harm to Robert? Like, how do you sort out that who decides the harm, for example? You talked about the senators. Is it really the people in the agencies deciding harm? Like, do they have the background or experience? Do you want to trust that to the companies, for example? So there's a couple of things I think that are going to need to be sorted out. But I do think, to Rob's point, because AI is so complicated, for the Zoom reasons that I gave, that example, we are going to be seeing a more of a shift to a harm-based approach. That's going to come up, like I said, a whole host of its own problems. So something to be thinking about with companies are saying, you know what, here in the US, it's okay, you know, we put someone on notice that we're going to be collecting their data, and we put them on notice that it's going to be used to train our gen AI and make in inference about them. Instead of that approach, which I know is often the basis for how the government seeks to control privacy rights here, I think we're going to be seeing a shift away from that because it's so fictitious in many ways, to what Rob was talking about with this Rite Aid / European approach to harm. So I think that's important for companies to be thinking about now is, okay, we do have consent. We do have notice. They decided to use our product anyway, so we're all good, check the box. I think there needs to be a second step now to say, what are the harms? Even if there's no law telling you to be doing this, you do need to be aware of how is this going to be used and think about how it's going to affect people on in the whole or in individual. But I think, you know, the AI Act is maybe the future of the law in the US, but companies should be really thinking about that now.
I completely agree with that. And I think even outside the context of AI and just in privacy in general, I think there is a big issue of the average person's ability to understand what a company does with their data, and therefore the validity of a consent, even if it is an explicit consent where you tick a box or press a button, never mind a consent that's just implied by your use of the website. You know, as Bill was alluding to, you know, I make a living from privacy, but sometimes if I have a question about, how it is that a particular platform seems to know something about me, and I try to work out where they've got it from, I find myself looking at Google's privacy notice or Facebook's privacy notice, I can't work out where the data, what the data flows are behind the scenes. Right. It's so I think it is, we need to find some way out of that and into creating an environment where citizens can use AI, be subject to AI, but feel that their well-being is being considered by the system, that they don't have to do the impossible and look out for it for themselves. And this is a slightly humorous, although serious as well, aside, we were talking about, you know, what Zoom might collect, what it might do. And I was reading something recently, and it was a new avenue for phishing, where basically this was deep fake video calls with fake individuals participating in a social engineering activity for a phishing purpose. And this is not something that's, you know, might come down the road. It is apparently happening.
Yeah.
So were our videos, for example, now to get into the wrong hands, they could be used to create, you know, a deep fake of Michael that would be used to ask one of a Vancord employee to move money from here to here. So as well as individuals being concerned about AI, obviously organizations have to be concerned about the new avenues of mischief, shall we say.
Well, what proof do you have that Michael and I are, you know, are being constructed in real time here already? So you don't know.
Wow, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
That's very deep. But no, Rob picks up on a great point, which is we've been talking a lot about privacy, how a company who's looking to utilize a Gen AI product or tool in its business, how they should be thinking about privacy laws. But there is the flip side of this too, different side, which is the security side. Yeah. Any tool that could be used for good can be used for bad.
Sure.
And we are seeing a tremendous amount on the cybersecurity risk, where, for example, phishing is becoming much more widespread. You can pump out much higher quality phishing attempts at a much greater volume. Social and engineering is so much simpler. It's better at, AI phishing has been shown to be better able to get past your spam filters, for example. So there are some risks too on the cybersecurity side, but for privacy, I think we're really at the beginning stages. And there's these challenges with privacy law in terms of transparency and consent and notice. These aren't new. People have been talking about these for years, saying like the famous thing, oh, well, if you read every single privacy notice, you'd be reading them 24/7. But they highlight, I think AI now is highlighting the insufficiencies of certain privacy laws to the challenge of not only knowing what someone is collecting about you, or knowing how it's going to be used, but knowing what they're going to be generating about you.
Right.
And I actually was thinking, Rob, you're going to share, there's a famous story, well, famous in privacy law world, so I guess that's like a huge asterisk, but about Target, where Target told consumers, it's collecting, I'm going to collect this data about you, I'm going to use it for these purposes. Okay, great, simple enough. And one of the purposes was to figure out if a particular consumer, based upon their buying preferences, may have a condition. And one of these was maybe based upon what this person's buying, they're actually pregnant. So then we could start marketing them pregnancy supplies and baby supplies. So for someone like me, I personally love when Amazon is like, hey, you have a dog, you should look at this. I'm like, oh, thanks, Amazon. This is super helpful. I am that person who they're trying to target because I just love when companies tell me things. So Target in this story started telling the consumer, who was like a teenager, that, hey, you might need baby supplies, and her father got it. And thanks to Target, not collecting data, about her or not providing notice, they were very, very clear under all the privacy laws about what they generated. They generated a pregnancy status and told the dad. And the dad was like, holy cow, I'm going to be a grandpa. I had no idea. So this is where some of these, I think, risk of harm ideas that we've been talking about are going to be the driving force in U.S. privacy law. I think we're going to see a shift, as Rob mentioned, the AI Act. GDPR started it with the DPIAs. It started the risk-based approach. And we do have risk-based approach now, too, of course, in the U.S. with like breaches and things. But the AI Act is going to take that to a new level. And I think that's where the U.S. law is going to be going, too. And it's not going to be easy, though. Because there's great benefits in telling someone, hey, you have diabetes, you should maybe, look at this new tool. There's great value. People benefit greatly from the advice of experts and the advice of your doctor and AI in healthcare, for example. Tremendous possibilities to catch things that doctors are missing, to create knowledge, to create an inference and create data about someone wholly separate from what you provided notice to and what you collected. So that's going to be the future challenge in trying to make sure that government doesn't stifle the technology for all the good that it can do, while at the same time as Rob mentioned, looking at some of these high risk harms, potential harms, and trying to mitigate those ahead of time. So that's where we're going to be going. But companies should be thinking about that now.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that statement is probably a great way to close this, which is the technology is incredibly useful, and we simply need to make sure that we're using it in an appropriate and ethical way. I mean, that's a 10-word summary of a 40-minute or 35-minute conversation here. I think the fact that we just spent 35 plus minutes talking about privacy, I think illustrates just how complex a topic it is, right? I mean, it's clearly evolving. It's not necessarily unique to AI, but I think, changes in the laws are going to largely be informed by kind of what AI does. Companies are writing privacy policies that make it easy for them to share data and use it creatively for future.
And I think a lot of companies are trying to figure out how to become more efficient and productive and utilize the tools available to them. And it's going to be hard to implement some of those controls on their employees as well.
Right, for sure.
And so there's a lot. We could spend hours on this.
Yeah, I think we'll welcome you guys back to talk more about this.
Part two.
I appreciate you joining. Oh, go ahead, Bill.
Oh, no, I'm always happy to be joining Rob, and maybe someday we'll actually find something we disagree
about.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
We'll look for that.
Great.
Guys, thanks for joining. I really appreciate it. I'm pretty confident that we'll want to explore this even further. I started the conversation by saying I was not a privacy expert. I feel like we just spent a lot of time, and there's so many outstanding questions still.
Absolutely.
So thanks very much. If anybody has questions, comments, feel free to comment, both in your podcast of choice or YouTube. Like the episode. That is huge for us if you do it.
Like and share.
And we're really happy to answer specific questions or come back with some more, a more specific topic. So
great.
Guys, thanks for joining. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye for now.
We'd love to hear your feedback. Feel free to get in touch at Vancord on LinkedIn. And remember, stay vigilant, stay resilient. This has been Cybersound.